This is the Country Focus podcast from BBC Radio Wales. To find out more about the programme, visit our website bbc.co.uk/Radio Wales. Hello and welcome to Country Focus. I'm Rachel Garside. This week we're on moorland in Mid Wales, asking how best to manage this environmentally sensitive landscape to protect and conserve some of our most precious bird species, lapwing, curlew and red grouse. I'm currently overlooking the most spectacular landscape. I've got a 360-degree view here. If you're looking over there, we've got Hay Bluff, the Black Mountains over there, and then if you look around there, you've got Mynydd Troedd, and then over to Penavan, all the way over to Bylth. I'm with Catherine Hughes, who's with the Powys Moorland Partnership, and we can hear the skylarks as well.
Very clearly.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a good soundtrack to what we're about to talk about. What is this partnership?
This partnership is about looking at things differently. The buzzword really in this is landscape scale projects. Welsh Government gave us an opportunity to look at things more collaboratively. So instead of us looking at just farming, just gamekeepering, just looking at communities separately, it was pulling it together, so embracing a much wider community and get the farmers involved. You know, farmers are 80% of the land managers in Wales, so if you want to get real change, a lot of the things they're already doing, but working collaboratively, having more conversations and having bigger benefits for the wider audience, really.
Is it just one moorland we're talking about?
So we're talking here about the Powys Moorland Partnership, which is three cluster moorlands. So we've got one north of here, which is north of the Knighton area. Here, this is called Island Moor, and this is the middle cluster. And then looking down there, we've got the third cluster. The reason why they want to do it in clusters is everyone's at a different stage of management in terms of the state of the moorland. We want to restore the condition of the moorlands back to how they were, really, so that we get the biodiversity back.
When we say moorland, what do we mean? What is it?
Everybody has a different definition. A lot of the graziers will say it's our hill. Moorland, dry heath, and home to a lot of the people here.
Now, if we look back, and I don't want to be overly negative, but I do remember the 2013 State of Nature report. It made for some difficult reading, and the figures were not great. The outlook wasn't looking good for a lot of species in Wales. Was that really part of the inspiration for this project?
It certainly was. It was the State of Nature report that really got Welsh Government to say, OK, we're going to put this project over to the farmers and say, you tell us what we need to do differently because we ain't getting it right. So conservationists, farmers, now it was an opportunity to say, farmers, we need a bottom-up farmer-led project. And that's what's happening here. So schemes in the past have been, the Glastier scheme has been very rigid, very prescriptive. I'm sure it had the best intentions, but it has failed a lot of the farmers because you can't do anything that's prescriptive because of the weather. Look at it here. The weather changes every 5 minutes. But really, it was about how do we put a scheme in place? And Welsh Government have given us this opportunity. It's called the Sustainable Management Schemes. There's a few of them around Wales. They're spreading. And it's tried to demonstrate how can we do things differently to address that State of Nature report that said everything's declining. How can we reverse that? What works do we need to put in place to put the health back into our moorlands? The application in this case was put together by the people that actually own the moors. So a lot of people wouldn't appreciate that actually this is privately owned by the Duff Gordon family. A lot of the moorlands are privately owned in Wales. But of course they're all common land, which is where there's a lack of understanding. So people come here for recreational use. A lot of people are using this place increasingly so, and Welsh Government want that. They want people to come out, get healthy, tackle obesity, tackle mental health issues. The scheme is about me getting people out, get the farmers to get more people out. Farmers have been good at that, but some better than others. How do we open the gates? How do we educate the public? How do we educate dog walkers that as we're coming up to the critical period with ground nesting birds that they mustn't let their dogs run? most people that we've brought up here will say, if there's no sheep, I assume all is well. They didn't know that there was ground nesting birds whose home it is here.
Like the skylarks.
Yeah, absolutely, yes.
Rachel.
This is Nick Myhill. He knows the story well. He is our bird person in terms of doing the monitoring, listening out for the birds.
Nick, you've got binoculars at the ready.
Shall we just stroll a bit this way? I can show you a bit of the habitat, because for the first time now, I think Welsh Government has really come up with the right ideas that this type of conservation has to be tackled at a landscape scale. In the past, we've looked at conservation, or we've looked at farming, or we've looked at water quality, or we've looked at public benefit and walkers, and we've looked at these things separately. But if you're looking at a moorland, you need to be looking at the total management, the improvement of the habitat, so that the birds benefit, the graziers benefit from it, so water quality benefits, so the people benefiting from it when they're dog walking or whatever. A whole landscape approach.
You can see evidence of bracken here. Is this an area that would be burnt regularly?
Yes. What you're looking at here, you can see some bracken that hasn't been cut, but this is well managed, this part of the moor, because the graziers top the bracken in the autumn. A very interesting habitat that produces. You see that what we're coming to up here is very low grazed, close cut, and it almost reproduces tundra. And that is exactly the habitat that golden plover like, which is one of the species that we're targeting. They're the most beautiful bird. As they fly, they'll turn simultaneously, a flock, so it'll suddenly go from bright to dark. And then they settle down, and I was working up here making scrapes for the waders. And after I'd finished working, I came out quietly in my truck. I wound the window down. I came within 50 yards of them. I could count them one by one. There are 185 up here, 185 golden plover, who really enjoy this type of habitat. And then in another couple of months' time, you'll see huge numbers of skylarks moving in here, another species which has declined. You know, I'm 69. I've lived in Radnorshire most of my life. I remember we walked over the hills and there were curlew. There were peewit, as we call them, lapwing, as is more widely said. There were golden plover, there were merlin. There were all these upland species, there were grouse. We just took them for granted. Curlew have crashed in Wales to somewhere around about 10 to 15% of the numbers that I remember only 30 years ago. It's quite difficult for us to put our finger on exactly what's gone wrong. But here again, whole landscape, they need both the moorland and the damp patches on the nearby farmland. So the method I'm using above all else is to be working closely in with farmers so that we can create the right habitat for curlew. And we are seeing some breeding curlew here now.
Nick, we know that in the past farming practices have been brought into scrutiny. Are there things that we've been doing in the past, things like overgrazing, that have contributed to that decline in your opinion?
Yes, I call myself neither fish nor fowl because I have both farmed and been a conservationist. I think that's a very privileged position because I can be trusted by farmers. I greatly trust farmers myself. We've got to get beyond the stage of saying, oh, it's modern agriculture to blame. Let's work out exactly what it is. So in this case, I would say we have drained too many of our upland in-by fields. If future government policy is going to be built on these sustainable management schemes, I think it will steer us in the direction of saying, you know, what are the specific things that we can do on farms? Farmers, for their side, they have followed farm policy as they've been bidden to do. I know most farmers would like to see more wildlife back on their farms. I don't think it's going to be a difficult job.
When you mentioned the red grouse, that's a bird that has been quite plentiful in the past, but now very much declined. That bird needs heather, doesn't it?
So it needs heather and it needs properly managed heather. And so if you think of these Welsh uplands, in the past, they would have been managed by a combination of mixed grazing, that's to say not just sheep, but ponies and cattle as well, and also burning. So on this scheme, on these Radnorshire Moorlands in the Powys Moorland Partnership, we're doing a huge amount of heather management. So the heather's being cut and it's being burned in a mosaic of patches so that you're getting heather of different ages coming up. The young grouse need young heather tips to be able to feed on. You were talking about peewits, about lapwings. The older birds can probe into the ground for worms and what have you, but young birds need the wetlands and the scrapes because during the first few weeks of life they're just going to feed on aquatic insects on the surface of the water. So we've got to be looking at all the different types of habitats. That's four ravens there. Spectacular birds. In the spring, they'll fly upside down in their mating displays. Obviously a hugely intelligent bird. The five target species on this scheme, although I'm not limiting myself to that, are hen harrier, grouse, golden plover, curlew, and lapwing peewit. One of the things that has been known for a long time by the conservation community is that well-managed moorlands have the highest biodiversity for birds. The RSPB commissioned a report in 2001 which demonstrated this. The conservation community has perhaps been slow in picking up on the whole landscape management side of things and realising that they desperately need to work in conjunction with gamekeepers and farmers to achieve those objectives.
Why is it important to include the gamekeepers?
When these birds get down to the low levels that they have got down to, predation becomes a really significant factor on the remaining population.
Nick, if we look at the hill opposite, we can see, well, more traditionally farmed land, clearly defined shape of the field. Yeah. Whereas here, it's just this expanse of open moorland. We just passed some horses grazing in the foreground there. Yeah. And as you mentioned, the ravens here, we can see a patch of land that this is heather here.
And within that heather, you can just see little patches of wet, which is where I've been creating some scrapes to just create small wetlands that the young peewit and the young curlew can feed on. You were asking about why I'm so enthusiastic to work with gamekeepers. Species like peewit and curlew, whereas I remember they'd be in groups of 20 pairs, you're now seeing single pairs, two together, three together maybe. It's much more difficult for those adults to defend their nests against predators like foxes and crows. You know, the gamekeepers working closely with me, they're not only protecting their grouse, they're protecting my waders, so to speak.
Why is it important to protect these species, though, Nick?
To me and to many, many people, you wouldn't want to live in a world which you couldn't have the natural experience. And Wales has got this fantastic amount of wilderness. Radnorshire itself is the highest county overall in Wales because it's got so much upland. And just the pleasure to come out here. If somebody wanted to see some of the rarer birds of prey, merlin, hobby, hen harrier, goshawk, peregrine, this is where I could bring them. There is a traditional view that gamekeepers are the enemy of birds of prey. Here, we can demonstrate that we can all work together and that we have the birds of prey on those areas where grouse are also being reared.
Nature thrives in a well-managed landscape.
Exactly. And, you know, would you want to be without it? Come the springtime, I hope maybe you'll come back up here in the springtime, when you've got, you know, the summer birds coming in, you've got the windchats, you've got the stonechats, the reed buntings up here, hordes and hordes of skylark and meadow pipits. We mustn't part with our wildernesses, must we?
Hello, you're out. Hello. Walking your dog.
Is yes, I do it every day if I can. It's just beautiful, very peaceful. Keeps me sane in a way. If I don't come up for two or three days, then I kind of just have to come up. So learned to love it a lot over recent years. So it was lovely last year. I think there was two pairs of curlews that we were aware of.
And it's lovely to hear the skylarks today, isn't it?
Yesterday was the first day that I heard them, so as a real sign of spring. Absolutely beautiful.
Nice to meet you.
And you.
Now, we've heard that there are lots of people involved in this project. Farmers, gamekeepers, conservationists, nature lovers. And with Colin Bagley, who farms this moorland, or part of it. Colin, we're looking down over your land here now, aren't we?
Yes, we are. I farm a 200-acre farm. I'm joining the local common. I am now chairman of the Hale Grazier Society as well.
Now, your beef and sheep graze this land. It's important for you to have that access, yeah?
Yeah, the access is usually to sheep rather than beef.
How do you keep that delicate balance, though, between farming and conservation? Because there have been suggestions that we've overgrazed landscapes like this in the past.
They've always looked at overgrazing in the past, but as you can see up across the hill here now, we've got a lot more gorse coming on the hills. I personally think that's usually a lack of stock to a certain extent, but it's got to be managed. And that's where we have to get in with the schemes and actually coordinate different areas. They grow differently. Until we can actually get people to actually recognise that side of it, it'll be in the right direction. And you'll get the bird life coming back, the wildlife, what everybody wants as well. Then you knock on, it's the tourists. Yes, the SMS scheme is very good in that way because it is enhancing the hill as well.
And when we say SMS, we're talking about sustainable management schemes. Do you feel that farmers have maybe unfairly been blamed for the decline of some of the wildlife, some of the bird species in areas like this?
I'm sure they can always alter the figures. That's more like it. It's an excuse, because most farms they can go around and there is different bird life, no matter where you go, and that's naturally happening. A farmer wouldn't be that way round. We care about it because we live here, we love it. So that's the reason why we're still here. And it's the reason why all the tourists come out here is because they love it as well. This is what we enhance.
The fact is, it's also your livelihood, though. There's a lot of talk at the moment about how we pay farmers to look after landscapes like this. What do you think the way forward is?
Difficult. If they can sustain the family farms and get environmental issues from there, whether they cap the payments, so that one farm doesn't get a big check, because the bigger the farm, I think they tend to get less time to actually conservate because they don't worry about it.
But if you can prove that you're doing things to benefit conservation, to benefit wildlife, that you should only be rewarded for that.
Well, up until now, we haven't been rewarded because all the payments, which is supposed to be conservation payments, we've been docked for woodlands, plantings, hedgerows. For instance, I got a 200-acre farm, but then they've docked 30 acres off me because I've got woodlands, hedgerows, plantings in corner, which is, to me, is a conservation part of my farm. So why should a farm be knocked for having conservation on his farm?
It's complicated, isn't it?
That's right. Every situation is different to every farm. But we have hedgerows because it's shelter, but it also enhances the small bird life. We don't just have fences. We try and have hedges as well, or trees as well, because that's preserving ourselves, because it is shelter, but it's also preserving the wildlife.
But if there was a move towards paying you to look after the landscape to improve biodiversity, for example, it would enable you to be able to stay here, wouldn't it?
Yes, I agree, but the payment at the moment is almost to enhance the landscape now. We don't knock the landscape because that's our livelihoods.
So it's keeping livestock, you feel that is you doing your bit to maintain this area?
Yeah, the keeping of livestock is to maintain your own program of your farm, and each field is different, it's maintained differently, so it's no different to the commons. If you're overgrazing one particular thing, your stock will go downhill, so they won't do, so that's detrimental to the farmer anyway. So
looking out here now, do you love looking at this view?
I think we all do, stood here now, don't we? There's no street lights, I haven't heard any traffic going by, and we're stood on a road at the moment. It's beautiful.
My name is Duncan Sinclair, and I'm the gamekeeper on Lamtony Moor in the Black Mountains in South Wales.
And I'm David Thomas, and I'm the gamekeeper on the Northern Moor, which is called Beacon Hill.
A gamekeeper is a job that's evolved. It's very different from the usual image conjured up of a man in tweed and it walking across the hillside with a gun over his shoulder, doffing his cap to the boss. It's now much more of a moorland management role, where we're tackling everything from bracken control, heather management. Yes, predator management does come into it, but also increasing access for local users, for tourists, access for school children, educational facilities such as the universities, who will come and do studies on moors such as this. So the role is now more varied than it's ever been, and the original definition of gamekeeper, I'm afraid, just doesn't cut it anymore.
It's not a 9-to-5 job, David.
It's not at all. I was a farmer before I went into this, and I'm sort of retired from farming. The two are very complementary because you're living in the countryside, working in the countryside, and on my hill I've got, well, there's 70 graziers registered, but there's about 20 graziers that graze sheep on the hill. And I'm with them every day, and I see them feeding their sheep, and we work together very well.
So who employs you then?
We are employed privately by a group of individuals who've come together to form a sustainable management scheme, which is then funded through the Welsh Government. It's also match funded by the individuals within the scheme as well.
Is that quite unusual then, to get gamekeepers involved in conservation management?
Not at all. If you'd asked me that question 30 years ago, the answer would have been yes, but things have moved on an awful lot since then. And the big point now is that conservation and the science and the research is pushing forward so much that there's more understanding in it. And what we know now is that if we're looking at something like grouse production, which is what we're standing on now, we're standing on a grouse moor, we know that we get a good number of grouse and a number of grouse that we can harvest as a result of good conservation, not good conservation as a result of grouse numbers.
Now, we've heard already from a bird expert involved in the project that when bird numbers get very low, predation is a problem.
Yes.
And so that's where you come in, isn't it? Well, pest control, effectively.
Yeah, one of our roles is the predator management. And I try and steer clear from referring to vermin or pests or anything of that nature, because I firmly believe that everything has a place within the ecology and within the ecosystem and the biodiversity. So what it's really a question of is balance. If you take a moor such as mine, where when I started I had two, maybe three pairs of grouse, 400 crows and 150 foxes, the balance has shifted. You're not going to get any breeding of the wading birds or a native species like the red grouse, because statistically things just don't add up. So what you need to do is find and then maintain that balance in what is, despite looking wild, a man-made environment.
How do you decide what to kill and how many?
Well, if you look at the hill around us, and even more so on my moor, it's an island moor that's joined by farming, and you've got valleys and covers and everything down in the valley, and there's no predation control taking place on all that land south of the hill. So the predators tend to come back up, so you're never on top of predators. And our main objective, both as a farmer and a sheep farmer and as a grouse manager, is to have the lowest density of foxes at nesting and lambing time, so then you have less of a predation problem.
Now, we know that, you know, shooting is important to parts of the rural economy in this part of Wales.
Sure.
When we're talking about the red grouse in this project, are we talking about shooting them?
If there's a surplus that can be harvested, yes, they will be shot. There's been no shooting on my moor since we started the project, because the numbers don't sustain it. If we only have two pairs, three pairs of breeding grouse and they end up getting shot, then we will be left with no grouse. It's that simple, and then the project falls apart.
But it might seem odd to people to think that you're encouraging numbers of birds in order to, somewhere further down the line, to shoot them.
I completely understand that, and there would be in that argument, oh, you're only doing it for sport and it's a rich man's sport. But that goes back to what I said before about the original definition of the gamekeeper being 100 years old. Yes, we will take a harvest off the grouse. Those grouse are making it onto people's plates. They are entering into the food chain. If you changed my title from gamekeeper to grouse farmer, it would be looked at very differently. The only difference is I'm not taking them to an abattoir in order to go through that process and get onto the table. It's being done out here. Yes, people are paying for that privilege, but the money they're paying is being pumped back into the environment to benefit the other bird species and the mammals and the reptiles in the area as well as the local economy.
There's a lot of people in this country that don't agree with killing anything. So I understand why people don't see it from our point of view. But I think if you look at the overall balance that we create, the increase in birds, and the one thing we've hugely increased in the last 2 years is our hare population. Unfortunately, I've probably increased hare numbers more than I have grouse at the moment, because the one thing grouse are very susceptible to is the weather. And last year, with both the beast from the east and the exceptionally hot, dry summer, we didn't do very well with the grouse chicks.
What we're finding more now is the balance. I mean, we've seen curlew on our moor this year for the first time in 10 years. And to see an indicator species like that is a huge bonus. We see the hen harrier, peregrine, a greater influx of the birds of prey, but we're also seeing an up in grouse numbers. Grouse are recognised as being in decline in the UK, which is the only place you'll find them. Yes, the predator numbers are going up as well, but we are getting more of a balance and more of a diversity of predators. It's not just crows and foxes and grouse, it's everything else we're looking at as well.
Duncan, if we're looking to the future of projects like this, how difficult is it going to be to encourage the next generation to get involved?
What you tend to find, be it in projects like this or gamekeeping in general, is that there's a wealth of human resource out there. There are very good people waiting to come through the ranks. I've been doing this since I was 9 years old as my first paid job on a grouse moor, and there are lots of other young ladies and men out there trying to get into it. I've been very lucky where I am, so as I pull out of this project over the next couple of weeks, I've got Sean coming in to take over from me, Sean Smith, who's been working with me for a little while now, getting used to the moor. His father worked on this moor as well. We're being able to hand it back now to the local guys for them to get involved and bring their skills to the fore.
There you are, Sean. That's the challenge. So why did you want to get involved? Why did you want to become a gamekeeper?
Well, I've always had a passion for gamekeeping and wildlife conservation, with my dad being a gamekeeper. But to get the first placement is always quite difficult. So when this job came up local, I thought it'd be excellent because I knew the area and it's really going to get me started in a new career.
How old are you now?
20.
Great. So this is a great opportunity for you to stay in the area where you grew up.
Exactly, it's one in a lifetime opportunity really. With this project we're going to actually make a difference because we're changing the heather uplands, which is in decline, so we're going to help that out and also helping the bird numbers. Yeah, I think it's going to make a change. Being a gamekeeper, you've got to be out all conditions, you've got to have a passion behind it and be enthusiastic to have a drive to get out and do the job.
We've come up to another part of the moorland, to quite a high point, so another panoramic view. And there's an interpretation panel that's just appeared and very conveniently telling me about the Powys Moorland project. It's Catherine, who's my guide today, is still with me. Catherine, we met a dog walker earlier who said she comes up every day with her dog because it keeps her sane. I mean, people get a lot out of these landscapes, don't they?
They certainly do. And talk about the Wellbeing Act. The amount of people that come up here to walk and to ride and to run, and it's a fantastic recreational landscape. We've had a lot of school children up here. It's brilliant for everyone and it inspires everybody. And what we want to do in this project is make sure that local children are aware of not only the beauty of it, but the need to respect it. We need everybody to be the ambassadors of the countryside, and that can't just be farmers and gamekeepers, that's got to be all the people that come and visit here. How are we going to live better together, better joined up thinking? These guys have been telling you how they can get the bird life back pretty quickly. There's still a chance. We've got the farmers with us. There's a lot of opportunity. Now we need to widen that appeal to the broader audience so that they attract into it as well and invest money, time and support these beautiful landscapes for future generations.
I think the Skylarks agree with you, Catherine.
I think
they've
do.
Joined in. They're following us.
They are. It's
they're
fantastic.
In agreement. It's been fascinating. Thank you so much for showing it to us. And that's it for this week from the Island Moor, part of the Powys Moorland project here in Radnorshire. From me, Rachel Garside, and the Country Focus team, thank you for your company. You can hear Country Focus every Sunday morning on BBC Radio Wales at 7 o'clock. Thanks for listening.